When was the last time you heard another pilot bring up the EH216S? Not at Sun N Fun, not at AirVenture, not over the coffee machine at the FBO. My guess is never, or maybe once, and the conversation moved on before anyone figured out what to think about it, and that is genuinely strange to me, because this aircraft holds a title that Joby Aviation, Archer Aviation, and Whisk Aero have each been spending billions of dollars chasing. The EH216S, built by a Chinese company called EHang, is the world's first type-certified autonomous passenger eVTOL, or electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. The certification came from China's Civil Aviation Administration, or KAAC, in October 2023. The aircraft has been carrying paying passengers commercially ever since. That's nearly 3 years of real-world autonomous passenger flight data accumulating right now, while the American and European eVTOL programs are still working through their respective certification gauntlets. I'm Vector on Clear Direct on Radio Hangar. Today we're breaking down this aircraft, what its certification actually means in the global context, and what 3 years of commercial operation might be telling us about the eVTOL industry. Before we get into it, a word from the people supporting this segment. AviationSol.com makes aviation challenge coins that mark the milestones that actually matter. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last. AviationSol.com. Let's start with what the EH216S actually is, because the name encodes the design. The 2 stands for 2 passengers. The 16 means 16 rotors. Those rotors are arranged in 8 coaxial pairs. Think of it as an octocopter, 8 arms radiating from a central hub, with 2 rotors stacked one above the other on each arm, spinning in opposite directions. The counter-rotation is the key to understanding why EHang chose this layout. When a rotor spins, it generates torque that wants to rotate the aircraft in the opposite direction. On a conventional helicopter, the tail rotor exists purely to counteract that torque reaction. On the EH216, it's the upper and lower rotors on each arm cancel each other's torque without any additional mechanism. You get the thrust of 2 rotors from a single arm position. The torque problem is solved at the arm level, and overall yaw control is managed through differential power across the 8 pairs. It's a clean engineering answer for a compact, urban-oriented vehicle that needs to operate from small vertipad infrastructure. The aircraft is fully electric. Gross weight is approximately 600 kilograms, about 1,300 pounds. Cruise speed runs around 70 knots. Range in normal commercial operations is roughly 16 nautical miles. Hold on to that range number. We'll come back to it. Here is the design feature that makes this aircraft fundamentally different from anything else I've covered on this show. There are no flight controls for the people inside. Not simplified controls. Not minimal controls. None, no stick, no rudder pedals, no throttle, no yoke, no switches that affect the aircraft's flight path. Passengers board, sit down, and the aircraft does everything else. The only input available to the people inside is an emergency landing button that commands the aircraft to identify the nearest safe area and put itself down under automated control. From an engineering standpoint, that's an intentional architectural decision, not an oversight. EHang's argument is that removing pilot authority from the cockpit eliminates an entire category of risk, specifically human error in flight management. No pilot to misread a situation. No inadvertent control input at a critical moment. No spatial disorientation response. The flight management system handles power distribution across all 16 rotors, manages wind corrections, sequences the approach, and executes the landing on a route that was verified by ground controllers before the aircraft ever lifted off. And from a redundancy standpoint, 16 independent propulsion units means 16 independent failure modes that don't cascade into each other. EHang's certification testing demonstrated controlled flight following simultaneous failure of multiple motors. That's a mechanical safety margin that most general aviation aircraft don't approach. It's a different safety architecture than a pilot plus aircraft system, and it deserves to be evaluated on its own terms rather than just measured against what we already know. Now let's talk about what the KAC certification actually represents, because I think American pilots tend to underestimate what it took to get there. CAAC is the primary airworthiness authority for the world's second largest civil aviation market. They oversee safety standards for hundreds of aircraft types operated by some of the world's busiest airlines. They have established bilateral agreements with aviation authorities across multiple regions. They have real stakes in air safety outcomes in China because aviation incidents in China affect China. They are not a permissive agency rubber-stamping things quickly to score national prestige. KAIC worked with EHang for several years to develop the certification basis for this vehicle because nothing like it existed in their regulatory framework. They had to write the rules while reviewing the aircraft. That is exactly what the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, is doing right now for the powered lift category that covers American eVTOLs. Writing a new regulatory framework for an entirely new class of aircraft is genuinely hard, regardless of which country is doing it. KAIC did it, tested EHang against it, and issued a type certificate in October 2023. That is a real accomplishment, and I think the Western aviation press significantly underreacted to it. Here's where it gets complicated for American pilots trying to contextualize what that certification means. The FAA does not have a bilateral aviation safety agreement with KAIC that covers type certificate validation the way it does with the European Union Aviation Safety Agency, or EASA, and Transport Canada. Those bilateral agreements allow a type certificate from one authority to be validated by another through a defined mutual recognition process. They exist because the US and European regulators have been aligning standards for decades. That same alignment with KAIC is much more limited for a variety of reasons that extend well beyond aviation. So a KAIC type certificate for the EH216S does not open an automatic validation path at the FAA. If EHang wanted to operate commercially in American airspace, they would need to start the FAA process essentially from scratch, working through the powered lift certification basis, demonstrating compliance with American airworthiness standards, and going through the full review. The Chinese certification helps establish EHang's credibility as an organization. It does not transfer to American airspace. EASA hasn't accepted the EH216S either. European regulators have been developing their own autonomous air vehicle framework, and they've been deliberate about it. The result is that EHang is commercially certified and operationally active in China, and the Western aviation market is largely watching from a distance. There have been efforts to expand. EHang has been in regulatory conversations with aviation authorities in parts of the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and several emerging markets where regulatory frameworks for novel aircraft are being built fresh rather than adapted from decades of existing rules. Some of those conversations have moved further than others, but the core problem remains. An aircraft certified in China operates as a Chinese-certified aircraft everywhere it goes. It is not a global certificate. So what have 3 years of Chinese commercial operation actually produced? EHang has been running services across multiple locations. Huangshan Scenic Area, one of China's most visited mountain destinations, became a signature EHang deployment. Tourists taking autonomous flights over dramatic terrain that would be difficult to access any other way. Guangzhou, Hefei, and other cities hosted demonstration and early commercial services. There are logistics operations moving small cargo on defined routes. Emergency response demonstrations, getting automated external defibrillators and critical small packages to locations faster than ground transport allows. The total flight count across EHang's combined fleet, including development and commercial operations, runs into the tens of thousands. The revenue fleet is not large. EHang is not operating hundreds of aircraft on high-frequency scheduled routes, but the operational experience being generated is real. Every commercial flight cycle produces battery performance data, motor wear data, maintenance interval data, software reliability data, and ground handling data that no laboratory test can replicate at operational scale. What has that experience revealed? The range limitation is the hardest operational boundary. 16 nautical miles means every commercial route EHang operates is a fixed corridor between two established points, each with charging infrastructure installed and verified. You can't improvise a new route on a busy Saturday because passenger demand shifted. You plan the infrastructure, you build it, you verify the route, you operate within that corridor. It's a hub-and-spoke model at a very small scale. That's an honest engineering answer to what battery technology supports right now at this weight class. But it means the EH216S is a vehicle for highly specific bounded operations in areas where the ground investment makes economic sense. It is not a replacement for general urban air transportation in the way the original air taxi vision was described to investors and the public. EHang isn't claiming otherwise. The gap between the aircraft's actual operational envelope and the vision that launched 100 investor presentations is worth being clear-eyed about. Weather is the other operational boundary. The EH216S is certified for visual meteorological conditions. Wind and precipitation ground the fleet. EHang has been smart about matching their operational geography to the aircraft's envelope. Scenic tourism in favorable Chinese flying weather is a different operational challenge than sustaining year-round scheduled service in a northern European city in February. They've been operating where the aircraft can reliably operate. That's good judgment. It also means the envelope hasn't been truly stress-tested at scale in difficult conditions. From a system standpoint, autonomous aircraft introduce a failure mode category that pilot-flown aircraft don't have in the same form. A pilot is an adaptive system. Even with significant equipment failures, a pilot with visual reference can manage many emergencies by applying judgment built from experience. An autonomous aircraft relies on GPS for position, inertial sensors for attitude, software for decision-making, and communication links for coordination with ground control. Each of those is a digital system with defined failure modes. EHang has built redundancy into every layer. Multiple GPS receivers, redundant inertial measurement units, backup communication paths. But layered digital redundancy and human adaptive judgment are genuinely different kinds of safety architecture, and whether one is more reliable than the other in real-world conditions is not yet a settled empirical question. EHang's 3 years of operational data is one of the inputs that will eventually help answer it.
Now let's put all of this in context against the American programs. When Joby, Archer, and Wisk describe what they're building, the operational envelopes are in a completely different class from the EH216, ranges exceeding 100 miles, cruise speeds above 150 knots. These are fundamentally more complex aircraft, and that complexity is a large part of why the FAA certification timeline has stretched. A tilting rotor aircraft that transitions from hover to forward wing-borne flight must be certified across its entire flight envelope, including the transition regime, which is the most aerodynamically complicated part of the operation. That is regulatory territory where there is essentially no prior certification art to draw from. Writing the basis, testing to it, and demonstrating compliance takes the time that it takes. EHang built a simpler aircraft and certified it first. The American companies are attempting a harder engineering problem and accepting the certification timeline that comes with that ambition. Here's what most people miss in that comparison. Being first to certify doesn't automatically mean you've identified the winning product. The EH216S serves a specific, narrow operational niche very well. The American programs are aiming for a larger market that requires a more capable aircraft. Both things can be true simultaneously. EHang certification is a genuine achievement, and it doesn't validate or invalidate the approach the American companies are taking. What would genuinely serve the entire industry is if the operational data from 3 years of EHang commercial flights informed the broader eVTOL safety research community. High cycle commercial battery pack degradation rates, software failure mode frequencies from actual operations, ground handling and charging infrastructure requirements at commercial scale, passenger behavior in fully autonomous vehicles. That data exists inside EHang's operations. Whether it moves freely between the Chinese and Western aviation research communities is complicated by competitive interests and a geopolitical environment that affects technical information sharing in ways that weren't a factor a decade ago. EHang trades on the NASDAQ under the ticker EH. The stock has had a complicated history, including a short seller research report in 2021 that made fraud allegations the company disputed and challenged in detail. The KAC type certificate helped stabilize confidence in the underlying technology and the company's technical credibility. But converting a demonstrated technology into a profitable business remains a different problem from demonstrating the technology. A limited commercial fleet operating tourism corridors generates modest revenue against the development and certification costs of a genuinely novel autonomous vehicle program. The business case for scale requires a volume of operations the current fleet and route network hasn't reached. The honest picture is this. The world's first certified autonomous passenger eVTOL is real. It's operational. It has been flying passengers for nearly 3 years. It has genuine range constraints, genuine weather constraints, and a certification credential that functions in China and limited other markets. It is not the unlimited urban air mobility vision from the investor presentations. And almost nobody in American general aviation talks about it. That's worth changing. Not because EHang threatens the American programs or makes them look slow, but because 3 years of real commercial autonomous passenger flights is a data set, and aviation has always gotten better by learning from what's actually happening.
not just from what's being planned. Sources for today's segment include EHang's operational and financial reporting, Aviation Week and Space Technology, the Royal Aeronautical Society's coverage of autonomous air vehicles, and KX regulatory documentation. More at radiohanger.com. I'm Vector. Safe skies.